This audio is part of the Pen Machine Podcast at podcast.penmachine.com, also listed at blueberry, blubrry.com.
So I wanted to get to a little bit of stuff about web editing. And I'm going to be brief on this because usually I have an hour or something to talk about that alone. But editing for the web is different than editing on paper, for paper, or print, or for email. You may or may not do it inside a word processor. It doesn't really matter. What I want to talk about is not necessarily the tool you might use, but the approach that you'd want to take. And what I'll use as an example there, are there any... There we go. Here's two magazines. How do you know what these magazines are called? Okay. How do you know which part of this is the title?
The big, whatever, at the top.
Yeah. Right. Okay, well, there's no law of physics that says that that's where the title of the magazine needs to be. But that has become the convention. One of the reasons is that when it's stacked in a magazine like that, you can figure out what to do. If, for some reason, we had developed a printing technology that things always hung from some sort of hanger, it would probably be, the title would be at the bottom so you could see it when they're stacked up. But it happens to be there. If we were in a country like China, or somewhere where things are written in Arabic or Hebrew, the magazines would be the other way around, and you would open them a different way and read them from what we would consider back to front. That's the convention there. If I open the front page of these magazines, what am I going to see? Are you all psychic? How did you know that?
Did you read magazines?
So you're right, there's an ad there. How far will I have to go before I find something that's not an ad?
Depends how expensive it is.
Yeah. So quite a ways in most of these. And this one.
Is it 5 or 6?
Yeah, 5 or 6. If it's Vogue, it could be 80. So in this one, actually, this one is interesting. It's actually right inside the front cover. I have an ad here. That is actually part of the functions, which is interesting. All those things like having the page numbers at the bottom, except on the ad pages, things like having a table of contents and a masthead and stuff in the front, having usually some sort of feature article right before the back page ad, those are all conventions that have come about as magazines have evolved over the past, whatever, several hundred years. And what that means is that when you pick up a magazine, even if you've never seen that particular magazine before, you know roughly what to do with it. You know where the title is, you know what it's called, you know how to find things in it, you know how to get to a certain page, you know what the page numbers look like, you know what's going to be in the back, what's going to be going on in there. So, now, a place where that is only recently started to become true is on the internet. When I first started giving these kinds of talks, these sort of standards were not very well established for the web. But now, some things are. If I click here, what's going to happen?
You're
going to go to the home page. Generally, on most websites, including mine and this one, when you click up there, you go to the home page. The logo or something in the upper left takes you to the beginning, the top. So if you find yourself somewhere way down in the website, you'll end up back at the top, back at the home page if you click there. Now, the reason I picked this one is because this is the English edition of Haaretz, which is a newspaper in Israel. And if you go to the Hebrew edition, the logo's up over here, because Hebrew's written right to left. So the convention doesn't apply everywhere, but here, the reason it's over here is because it's right to left, that's traditionally where you would start reading something. So there, the same thing applies. It just applies in the direction the language is actually written. So that sort of convention, another convention is that if something's underlined, and probably blue, but not necessarily, it's a link. If you ever see anything underlined on a web page and it's not a link, you go, hey, come on, click, and it doesn't, and you're really frustrated because the convention has been broken. And what that means is they're starting to become a sort of body of established precedent for no particular reason, a lot of it. I mean, why should links be blue and underlined? That's completely arbitrary. That's just the way they did it when they first started building web browsers that did color. That's come to be what you expect. So if you see something that's different, you might have to think about it a bit. Maybe it doesn't have to be underlined, but it has to be different from the rest of the text in such a way that, you know, so if you look up here, you figure these blue things are probably links too, and they are, because they're the same color as the underlined things. Stuff like that is starting to become a convention. So if you're starting to edit and write for the web, you have to be aware, make yourself aware of some of these conventions that are establishing themselves. And that's because there's a well-known web usability expert who's somewhat controversial, but he's pretty smart about most things. His name is, I guess it's Jacob Nielsen. He's originally from the Netherlands, I think, but he works in California now. And his law is users spend most of their time on other sites. What that means is if you are involved in building a website or writing something for a website, you'd have to have a pretty good reason to do things in a substantially different way than every other website does, because that's where people spend most of their time. If they're used to links being underlined and underlined things being links, if you change that on your site or you find some other paradigm to do that with, they're going to be confused. And when they're confused, what do people do on the web? They leave. So if you're trying to bring people to a website, for the most part, you should be using some of these conventions. That doesn't mean you can only do things a certain way or you can only write a certain way. It just means that you need to be aware of those things. And just like in any other writing and editing task, awareness of the rules lets you break them when it's appropriate. Now, I'm going to fly through some of these things because we don't have a ton of time. But one of the things I wanted to emphasize is that writing for the web and editing for the web, and particularly editing text that was intended for print for the web, is a pretty substantial task. Because if you look at this screen, although it is extremely large, its resolution is actually pretty low. You can see all the little jaggy bits on the letters and stuff. If I had, a high-quality printed map that was this large, the detail on it could be unbelievably deep. You could have print. If you don't need reading glasses, you could have tiny, teeny, tiny print showing. I could have a map of Canada here, where you could have probably pretty much any town of any substantial size could be on a map this size, and you could actually see it and read the name of it, as well as rivers, mountain ranges, elevation if you wanted it, all sorts of things like that. You can't actually get that much detail on a computer display that's got this kind of resolution. What that means is when you're reading it at a more normal size, like on a laptop like mine here, or on a screen like this, or typically on your other screen, you're not actually getting as much detail out as you would from paper of the same size. And what that means is you read slower. But what it means is you don't read, you skim. So when you're editing material for the web, you need to be aware that it needs to be written in a different way. And here is my prime example. A few years ago, I stumbled across this essay called Women in the Web. Interesting essay by a professor at the University of Maryland, I think. Originally written in 2003. It's a pretty interesting essay. It is very academically dense. It's full of jargon, but it's got some interesting points. However, here's what it looks like. Still going. Now, my question for you as I scroll endlessly through this document is, would you read this on the website?
Oh, you're very, very...
With the black text on the...
I will print it.
Yeah, you'd probably print it out because the black text on a green background at a small size with paragraphs that look like that and no links in it and no indications just makes you go, ugh. I mean, most people would just go, okay, never mind. They might get through the first paragraph, and the first paragraph is, three pages long practically. And they just bail out. So what I did when I discovered this, I mean, look at this. This first paragraph, we're like 1.5 paragraphs in the first page of the document on this screen. Now, this is not an atypical way to write a scholarly journal, for example. And I emailed Dr. King, and I asked her politely, this is about the web. Did you write it for the web? And she said, no, I wrote it for an academic journal, and it got republished as is on the website. And I said, would you mind if I kind of tried editing it a bit so that it would work better on the web? And she said, sure, why not? And I had originally intended this to be a fairly ambitious project in multiple stages, and I only got to the first one, but whatever. So what I did is I took the text, copied and pasted it, and I edited it for the web, and this is the same article. Now, I'm going to scroll through it in the same way. This is exactly the same words. I didn't change any of her sentences. I didn't change the order of anything. I didn't get rid of any of the jargon stuff I would have liked to. This is what it looks like now. Now, it's still pretty long, but as you can see, what I've done is put some subheadings in, and these I just took. I took some chunk of, you know, the topic sentence of a paragraph and made it a subheading. I turned some of her long, big sort of serial lists into bullet lists. Took some of the quotes and made them set off block quotes, numbered lists, you know, various levels of headings. It's still a difficult read, and I didn't put any links in it, and it's still got a bibliography at the end. But, and the other thing I did is I took those paragraphs that were this long, and I broke them into shorter paragraphs. And even though this is something that your English teacher would probably have frowned upon back in elementary school or high school, it is not unusual, example here, to have a paragraph on a website that is one sentence. Two, quite typical. Three, not unusual. Four is actually getting long for a website. If you have a seven sentence paragraph on the web, you should find a way to break it into more paragraphs than that. Because people need the visual space to figure out what they're looking at when they're going down there. And that's why the subheadings are useful and the lists are useful. And in fact, one of the other things I should have done here and didn't do is something I did over on the side, which is boldface some of the key phrases in the body text, because that provides visual anchors. And people can skim, which is what they do, and go, oh, that's an interesting phrase. Maybe the stuff around it is worth reading. And, you know, even if they print this out, it's going to turn out. So I've set it up so that it prints out without all the color and stuff. It even prints out in a way that's a little bit more pleasant to read. It ends up being what? 17 pages long, but still better than it could have been. So there's an example of, and this is without doing any actual real editing. This is purely formatting and markup, really. Just saying, okay, I'm cutting the paragraphs into chunks, and I'm making subheadings, and I'm making bulleted lists and numbered lists, and I'm just going to try and break this information up in such a way that you can try and digest it in smaller pieces.
What did she think of here?
I sent it to her, and I didn't actually hear back from her, and it's like two years ago now, so I don't know. She's very busy. She's a professor and whatever. I don't know. You know, I didn't change anything that she said, so presumably she'd be okay with it. But I guess I should check one.
Yeah. No, I just was great that she gave feedback about your...
I think the thing is, I sort of said to her, you know, I've gotten this far, and I had intended to go farther and actually trying to simplify her language somewhat, because when you put something on the web, you don't know who's going to read it. You publish something in an academic journal, you could pretty much rely on, especially, you know, the kind of journal she was publishing this in, can rely on other professionals in her field of sociology or whatever it is to be the vast majority of the people who are going to read that. So you can get away with some of the sort of insider jargon that they will understand and you won't. Personally, I'm of the opinion that you shouldn't use it anyway, even in an academic context, because often that jargon simply gets in the way of saying what you're saying clearly. And if you can't explain it without the jargon, your idea probably isn't very good. But you get wrapped up in it, especially in academics. You probably know that if you've been in college. You get wrapped up in this, you know, terminology of semiotics or whatever. You know, there's stuff in here. Let me just pick a random paragraph. Let's see. Actually, these are not so bad. Yeah. These convergences are explicitly commercial, political, and technological in ways that are highly visible right now. That's not a bad sentence. But you get into some other stuff in here where there were words I had no idea what they meant, and I would have clarified that. And I wanted to go in several steps and get it to the point where it was basically a web page that anybody could understand without actually losing the force of the ideas that she was saying. And that's a difficult project, and you may be... And plus, I wasn't doing it for any money, so I sort of gave up on it when I had other things to do. But that's an interesting exercise to try, and it may be something that you're asked to do. And particularly, you know, or the other side of it is what I often get at my work is, you know, here's my bulleted outline or my whatever thing of the 12 things I want to say on our website about this product. Write it up. And it needs to be, you know, a couple pages on the website in that makes sense with some images and other things. And how do you get that all to fit together? Now, I happen to write the code, too, to make it lay out. You may not do that, but it's good to keep that sort of stuff in mind. The other thing that is a good thing for writers and editors is that even though there are tons of places on the web that are full of images and movies and sound and everything else, it's fundamentally a text medium and still is. It's built in HTML, hypertext markup language. And Google, the site everybody uses, almost entirely relies on the text of web pages to figure out what they're about. And I'll give you an example of how that's worked. This is not just a toot my own horn. You saw my guitar before. Okay, if you type cheap guitar into Google and click the first link, you get my web page. Now, why on earth would that be so when I don't sell guitars? It's because a year ago, I went hunting for a new guitar for myself. And I did a rather exhaustive search because I wanted a cheap one that was good. And so I roamed all around town and did all this stuff. And then when I got through the whole process, I said, I'll write it up. Why not? Because I've seen this work before. So I wrote up this big article that talks about all the different instruments I looked at with pictures of them and discussions of what they are and how much they cost and what I thought about them and which one I eventually decided on, this one, and what it's like and how it sounds and all this. So it's a pretty long article, and there are the calluses on my finger from trying all those guitars. So I wrote this up and posted it on my website. And I've had my website going for a while, and people link to it. It's reasonably popular. What it turned out is that a lot of people found this article useful, and they pointed to it saying, you know, here's an article about cheap guitars. And the way Google works, how many of you used search engines before Google? Like, before 1998? Okay. You remember what that was like. You'd type in a search term, and you would get 150 sites that were mostly pornography. And that was because in that time, the search engines on the web, essentially, the machines went out and they tried to find every website they could, and they grabbed all the words from all the websites and sucked them into a big database. And when somebody searched for cheap guitar, they just looked for how many pages had, you know, the words cheap guitar in them and how many times, and the ones that had it the most in prominent places came to the top of the list. Problem with that is the porn people and the gambling people and all the other people figured this out and just started putting cheap guitar, cheap guitar, cheap guitar, cheap guitar, cheap guitar at the bottom of their pages, and they came to the top of the list. What Google did is it enlisted all of us in order to figure out what was good. Anybody who builds a website or writes a blog or does anything on the web that links to other things that's on the public web, Google takes that and it says, okay, if we're looking for something about cheap guitars, here are a whole bunch of sites that have linked to something about cheap guitars, and they've all pointed to this site, and they've used the word cheap guitar somewhere in or near the link that they made. So presumably, because all these sites, which I already know are good from previous things, are pointing to this site, it's probably good, a good resource about that. So what it's doing is it's basically using all of our effort as people who build websites, like people like me, on the web. All of our work, we're working for Google for free in order to make their searches better, because every time we point to something, Google goes, that's like a vote. So rather than using machines to figure out what's important, it uses people to figure out what's important and uses the machines to mediate that. And they have other things in the mix, too, like, you know, the occurrences and words and things like that. And for example, I have the word cheap guitar up here in the title bar, and it's also here in the title. Presumably, Google figures this page must actually be about that subject, which it is. So that's this particular example, but this happens all the time, and it's not just in search. What Google is reflecting and what the other search engines are reflecting is that websites that are any good are useful. This page, if somebody's looking for a cheap guitar, this page is actually remarkably useful to them. They might not buy one of the ones I've listed, but I give them a pretty good example of 15 or 20 different kinds of cheap guitars that might be worth buying, and also describe the criteria by which I found them good or bad or whatever. Which means that even if they go through all these and go, well, none of those are what I'm looking for, they'll go, ah, well, at least I know that this and that might be good, and this manufacturer makes things here, and whatever else. So when they go out and do their own investigation, they have some background material. So this site is useful. This page is useful. And a useful page is a good page and is a well-visited page. So for you, if you're working on websites, your key task among the team building a website, because it's usually not just one person, is to convince people that they should make the website or the web pages useful, readable, something that people actually want to go to and use. Because ultimately, that's what gets you good search results, that's what gets people visiting you, and that's what accomplishes what you're trying to do. And what that means is you have to think in terms of the people coming to the site, not the organization making the site. A key flaw that you see sometimes in a lot of websites is they're organized around the way the company is organized. So you have the part of the website that has to do with the finance and administration part of the company, and the other part that has to do with the imaging division, whatever that might be. Like, say it's a printer company. They have an imaging division. They have a enterprise and corporate division. They have a finance and whatever division. They have a sales division. If you're going to that website trying to find a printer cartridge, which one of those do you go to? How do you know? You might go, well, sales? Imaging? I don't know. How about if it was organized saying printer supplies? Then you'd go, aha, I go there. So a key thing to make the decision is not to organize a website or a page in accordance with what you want to, or with how you're organized or what you want to accomplish, but with imagining and testing out too what the people coming to the site actually want to do. Do they want to find something? Do they want to have some fun on your site? Do they want to accomplish something? Do they want to buy something? What are those tasks? And build it accordingly and write it accordingly. So that's my key message for when you're dealing with the web. The actual technologies you use are going to change, and they've been changing constantly since, you know, the web is now in its entirety about 14 years old, and as a public thing, about 10. And as a commercial thing, about that maybe a little bit younger. So it's a very, compared to those magazines over there, books, television, radio, many of these other media, the web is very young. And so it's still figuring out, and the people who are building it are still figuring out what works and what doesn't. So it's new territory, and if you get into working there, one way to go is to look and see what successful sites and unsuccessful sites do, what's good, what you find frustrating when you're trying to accomplish something online, and how to avoid that. All those sorts of things are useful. And one of the things that's very good, even if you're just a writer on a team or an editor on a team, is to encourage the people building a site to test their site with real people trying to do real things. Just to grab some people off the street and say, you know, or put an ad somewhere, you know, come down to SFU or whatever and say, we need 3 people or 5 people to come to, you know, our office and just try using our website to do what we think you want to do. And you watch them and you videotape them. And you see where they run into trouble and where they are able to do what you think they could do. And you suddenly go, oh, I totally didn't get that. It's amazing what you can accomplish in that sort of thing. So that's a really useful thing, too. Even if you don't do it yourself, encouraging others on your team to do that is good. Most of this stuff I'm going to skip here. I'm just going to show you two more things. Here's the Mountain Equipment Co-op website and West Beach. Now, West Beach has improved a bit, but this site is what I would call a brochureware site. You get here and you're like, well, I'm looking for Gore-Tex pants. And you go, okay, I can rate my skis, whatever that is. I can get the latest mugshot. I can get the Frosted Flakes trailer. I can read about fresh meat. I can... Oh, there's some pants. Okay, that looks kind of cool. Are those Gore-Tex? It's got lots of pockets. It's worn by the Whistler Blackcomb Terrain Park stamp. Okay, that's good. Oh, now I've lost it. Okay, maybe it's Winter 05. Rider stuff. What? Okay, I just want some pants. How do I get pants? Okay, so if I go over here to Mountain Equipment Co-op and I go, men's clothing, waterproof breathables, that's Gore-Tex, pants. There we go. 3 clicks. There's an example. The West Beach site is trying to be cool. And maybe they don't sell stuff straight off the site anyway, so whatever. Maybe their goals are different. But if people were going to these two sites trying to buy some pants, they're going to buy them at MEC, and they're not going to buy them at West Beach. Because West Beach may look better. It may look cooler at first, and it may be slicker and hipper and whatever else. But I don't really want to rake my steez whenever that is. I want to buy some pants. And right here, I'm ready to spend my $290 on some expensive pants. Or $165 or whatever. And that's because they have thought about what their users want to do. And they have, you know, good... Think about it as a writer. Being able to write this short chunk that gives everybody everything they need to know about those pants that cost almost $300 is a pretty challenging task. So, you know, that's a good thing to have done there. And you should get some money for that. So, before we finish up, there are two things I need to do. One of which is give you the evaluation forms. And the other one of which is to give you your certificate. I didn't know you got certificates. So, what I'll do is the certificates are, as far as I can tell, sorted in alphabetical order by last name. So I will pass you both. You can grab your certificate and no one else's, please, and then grab an evaluation form, which you should fill out right now because I guess they want them before the end of the thing. If you didn't get one of these super funky orange pens, you're welcome to take one. The writing and publishing program pens. Looks like I got a highlighter on the back end. Oh, cool. If you didn't get one of those, grab those there. And while you're working on the evaluations, does anyone have any more questions or anything they'd like you to, like me to address?
I'm trying to think, you know, you have me clearly, as I came to do the exercise.
Yeah.
It was far more difficult than when I was listening to you. I mean,
yeah.
My God, I'm barely comprehending this.
Yeah.
And so I think, okay, where do I go with this from here? Obviously, I need to do some more practice. To get to the point where it's, you know, it's moved from it. So,
yeah.
I guess my question is, what is it?
Well, I mean, the only reason that this stuff is smooth for me, really, honestly, the only reason that these tasks are easy for me is because I've taught a whole bunch of these seminars. I really didn't get my head deeply into figuring out how this stuff works until I went, oh, I'm going to have to teach people about this, and I'm going to have to be able to answer questions. Before that, I was just stumbling my way through, and I discovered things here and there. You know, these things like the paste unformatted and stuff like that. So the key thing is, the key thing to remember is that whenever you get a client that sends you a document, they know way, 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 way less than you did when you got here today, never mind what you figured out in the several hours since. So anything you do to the document, anything at all, even the most minimal amount of it, is going to be great for them. And, you know, I've gotten documents that I've had, you know, I've left things too late, and I've had a horrible deadline, and I've rushed it through and not really done the job and sort of sent it off going, oh, that was awful, that was terrible. And they come back going, that was fabulous, great, here's your check. And so I think one of the things you need to realize is that as an editor, as a writer, as somebody who's working with these words, you already have the skills just off the bat to make things, and your only job is to make things better. Your job is not to make things perfect, because you can't. So what I would do is, you know, take that same exercise sheet I gave you and look at some of the things that caused you trouble and maybe play around with them. The only way I found this stuff out was because I was trying to do something and I actually got into it. And I looked at that book, that Word in a Nutshell, or any number of these other books, and just... figured it out, you know, and then went from there. You could just, if you want to take the CD, you can. If you don't, feel free to. You can drop your evaluation there.
You're going to post your audio on your second.
I'm going to post the audio. I didn't get some of the second section because something went wrong here, but I've got this bit and the first bit at least, so some of it will be there. That covers a lot of the ground I'm talking about. That whole web page is still there. It has a lot of the tips and tricks in it. And I have pointers to the helps. You know, again, the online help for Word, like the actual on-the-website help, is remarkably good, and you can find a lot of the things you need to do there. And I was even doing that here. Oh, how do I change the language? How do I, you know, change the numbering of the sections? If you just search for, if you know you can do it, then sometimes that's all it takes. Can I get you something? Did you not get one?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
Can you sign my certificate?
Am I supposed to sign it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't even know we had... Okay, I'll sign it. I think somebody got an unsigned one.
I spelled your name wrong.
Derek Mills. All right, well, fine.
That's hilarious.
These evaluations
are also for a different
course.
Yeah.
Are they? Well...
Oh, no! They are.
If you can write at the top what the correct version, what the correct course is... Know, or I'll mention it to them.
That's so unprofessional.
Yeah. Well, you see, they should have hired you to look over the certificate and the evaluation form.
Well, I suppose the poor person has, he's got the other wrong set.
Presumably so.
So there's going to be two sets of wrong
sets.
You can have this one. All right, there's one here. That. Who else needs a signature? An autograph, so to speak. There we go.
You just wanted to do this again, but you wanted to sign
all that. I didn't know these certificates were going to happen until I walked in. They said, here's the certificate. Just put it there and all. I'm not looking at them, so. I'll just shove them in the envelope when they're ready.
You're more professional than they are. And you have the wrong.
Okay. Does anybody else need their certificate signed? I have business cards here if you want to take them. Right there. Two different sets that you can use. Use the ones with the flowers. These are my personal ones. The other ones are my business. So feel free to grab that. If you have questions, you can email me. I can't guarantee you that I will have an answer, because I don't always know. But I can maybe point you in the right direction. And thanks very much for coming. I had a good time. I hope it was good for you. There we go. Thanks a lot.
Are you...